You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In her latest novel, The Long Song, Andrea Levy recreates the era of slavery on the island of Jamaica. Her protagonist is a girl named July, the daughter of a black slave and a white overseer on a sugar plantation. At 9 years old, July is forcibly taken from her mother to become a lady's maid in the big house, and so begin her adventures. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm pleased that it brings Andrea Levy to our show, although not to our studios as we had originally planned. Welcome.
Well, oh, it's good to be here anyway.
You're a victim of the volcano?
I am indeed, yes. So I'm sitting in London.
Your previous novel, A Small Island, which won both the Whitbread Book of the Year Award and the Orange Prize for Fiction, Best of the Best, was set in England, where you live, in the 20th century. Why did you choose to write a historical novel this time?
Well, I suppose what happened was, with all my novels, I'm sort of trying to look into my own sort of heritage, my own family heritage. And so Small Island was very much concerned with my parents' generation and with their immigration to Britain. And so after I'd sort of finished that book, I thought, OK, so why are my parents in Jamaica? You know, let's have a look at that. And of course, as soon as I said that to myself, then I came straight into slavery because that's what they were doing in Jamaica. Not that they were slaves, but, you know, obviously some of my ancestors had been. And so I thought I suppose I'm going to have to look at that. I didn't really want to, I must admit.
And you wound up drawing upon a powerful story, real events, the Baptist War of 1831, something I was totally unaware of.
Oh, right. Yes, that's, a lot of it I was unaware of as well. And it was only during my research that I realized what a sort of rich history it was in the Caribbean. And not a lot of it has actually come through, really. Not the sort of the real rich bits.
Well, why was it called the Baptist War? Were there a lot of Baptists in Jamaica at that time?
Yes, I mean, it was thought by the planters in Jamaica that it was the Baptists who sort of started the insurrection. It was the Baptists who sort of goaded on the black enslaved people into rebelling at this point. I mean, I think that the Baptists were the only people who were telling the enslaved people that they were proper sort of human beings and had certain rights. And at that time, the enslaved people in the Caribbean in Jamaica thought that they'd been freed, but the planters were just keeping their freedom from them, and that's why the rebellion started.
Were they at all aware of the successful rebellion that had happened in Haiti about 30 years earlier in the late 18th, early 19th centuries?
Well, I'm sure some of them were, and I know that the planters would have been aware of it, and the planters would have talked with their slaves in the room and things like that. But as I try to sort of show in my book, communications are not what they are today, so I'm not altogether sure who would have known what. So I try to sort of bring that out, that not everybody knew, you know, the history of what was going on around them or indeed where they were at any time, you know.
How did slaves from different plantations communicate with each other?
Usually little boys ran with the stories, and they sort of tried to recall them while you fed them some yam, which is in the book. But it's a word of mouth, you know, it just goes from person to person.
So it was a rather disorganized slave revolt.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think that most slave revolts were going to be haphazard because of the nature of those sorts of things. But it was brutally repressed as well. So and it was quite brutal at the time. But I'm not sure about it being haphazard.
Well, Haiti was a success partly because it occurred during the French Revolution and the French were otherwise occupied until it was too late. What was the situation in Britain at the time? Wasn't there a strong anti-slavery movement in England?
There was. There was a strong anti-slavery movement, and it was working all the time. But this was, as I said, the slaves believed themselves to have been freed, and that the abolitionist movement had been successful, and that it was only the planters that were actually keeping their freedom from them. And that was, you know, the sort of the feeling amongst the enslaved people.
Was Amity, your fictional plantation, typical of sugar plantations in Jamaica?
Oh, I don't know. I did a lot of reading and research around them, and I hope it is. I did what I could, and it is certainly. I went to a plantation when I was researching and had a look at the geography and how it all sort of worked. But there were many, many, many plantations, and so it could well have been one, yeah.
Well, slaves in your book suffer incredible humiliations and punishments, even torture. Was it similar to what was happening in Cuba or the American South at the time?
I'm sorry, can you say that?
Do you know whether there was something unique about Jamaican, the way Jamaican slaves were treated, or was it pretty much the way slaves in the Americas were being treated, whether by the Spanish in Cuba or by American slave owners in the South?
Yeah, well, it was probably very similar. I mean, I think slavery was held in place, but in the same sort of torturous way. I know that Jamaica was thought of as quite a brutal place, but slavery was a brutality, and it was kept in check by, you know, the same sort of oppressions.
My guest is Andrea Levy. Her latest novel is The Long Song, published in this country by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. July is taught by her mistress to read and write, at least in a rudimentary way. And after that, July teaches herself. Slaves in the United States at that time could be punished for literacy. Was that true in Jamaica as well?
I'm sure in some parts of Jamaica at certain times, yes, that would have been true as well. It wasn't sort of a universal thing. But after a while, when we were talking about the coming up to the end of slavery, and things were relaxing a little bit more. And so actually, when she learns to read and write, she is, in fact, free. She's been freed and slavery has ended. And that's when her mistress wants her to help her with the plantation, and then realizes that this slave can't read or write, much to her exasperation.
You seem to treat the white characters in your book a bit satirically. Was that the attitude the blacks had toward them? For example, in one scene at a plantation owner's party, there are black musicians who play poorly on purpose, but then later play well for a slave's party.
Yeah. Well, the way that I researched this book, it's very difficult because there aren't very many slave testimonies from actual enslaved people in the Caribbean. And so there wasn't a lot to draw on of actual sort of testimony from them. And so what I found that I was doing was I was reading there's a lot of stuff written by white planters and missionaries and abolitionists. And in fact, anybody who visited the island seemed to write a small volume on what life was like there. And these were from a white perspective, but it was the white people talking about what the Negroes, for want of a better word, around them were doing, and how they were. And so some of those incidences, for example, being at a dinner party where the Negroes are putting sort of wine out of the window, is something that was reported by a white person saying, "I saw the Negroes putting bottles of wine out of the window," and I sort of thought I, you know, could see through their narrative to see this quite rich picture of what the enslaved people's lives would have been like and how they could have, you know, led them a merry dance.
Was Negroes the word used? Because some of your Jamaican characters are black, some are half black, some are one quarter black. Mm. And I don't know how many degrees of skin color had names.
Oh, lots. There were lots. But yes, Negro was used at the time. And then if you're a Negro and a white, you're a mulatto. And then a mulatto and a white was a musty, and a musty and a white was a mustafino. So it went on until, I think it's about four or five, until you get to white.
And lighter skinned people, I'm assuming, had certain advantages.
Yes, and they considered themselves to be a little more high class than a darker-skinned person. So that sort of pigmentocracy sort of went on.
You include the dialect in which the characters speak. Was that something you got from the white narratives, him, her, and me instead of he, she, and I, pickney for child, I guess pickaninny comes from that as well, lickle for little, be for is. Is there a kind of a Creole that persists in Jamaica?
Well, there is a dialect in Jamaica that it's called Patois, and it's almost a language of its own, really. And that has those sort of inflections and those sorts of him and, you know, which you just mentioned. And so the book isn't written in Patois because I don't actually speak Patois, but it's written in a sort of using the sort of cadences of Patois. Just to sort of give you an idea of how people may have spoken.
In the early 19th century, what was the ratio of the black population to the white population in Jamaica?
They outnumbered them. That's all I can say. I couldn't give you any actual figures. But they outnumbered them, you know, by quite a large margin. So when you had something like the Baptist War, a slavery revolt, you had the white people very, very jittery indeed, because they were totally outnumbered on a small island in the middle of the Caribbean Sea.
Were all the blacks enslaved, or had any bought their freedom?
Some had bought their freedom, and some had been manumitted, some had been given their freedom. There were also a lot of Jews in Jamaica who had come to settle. And there were people from China and later on from India. So it's a real mixture of people in the Caribbean.
In the U.S., a small number of free blacks owned slaves. Was that possible in Jamaica?
I'm not altogether sure whether that was possible. They could keep slaves. I don't know whether they could actually own them.
Well, after slavery was abolished in this country, the situation for the emancipated blacks wasn't all that great. They wound up working for terrible wages. In some cases, they remained kind of enslaved. What happened in Jamaica?
Pretty much the same thing. I mean, it was a very difficult situation and a very bloody situation. What happened was that the enslaved people, a lot of them didn't actually want to carry on working on the sugar plantations, but the whole of Jamaica's economy was bound up with this sort of labour. And so the whole second part of the book is actually trying, you know, one of the white people trying to get the workers now, not the enslaved, but the workers on his plantation to actually work. And it was very difficult to actually get them to do it. And so there were all different sorts of strategies, saying they couldn't stay in their houses, or stopping their food rations so they would work for them, and all sorts of things. That happened, and people revolted against this as well, and there was a lot of poverty, and, you know, it was a lot of hardship that went on.
You write of former slaves being worth money. Whose money was it?
Whose money?
Yeah, I mean, they if they were free, were they still something that could be bought and sold?
When slavery ended in Jamaica, there was a huge compensation given by the British government to the planters for the loss of their property. So each slave got a price, and the owners of those slaves were given the amount in compensation for losing their property. The slaves weren't given anything, of course.
Just one more thing. The book is called The Long Song. What does that refer to?
Well, the book was always going to be a song. There was the Taino, who were the original inhabitants of Jamaica. They used to have their history used to be sort of recorded by somebody in the village sort of learning it and then sort of singing it as a song and singing it back as a song. And I just really like that idea that this is a long song, and this is a story that's of slavery that is with us today, and the repercussions of it are still with us, and it goes on.
Andrea Levy was born in England to Jamaican parents. Her fourth novel, Small Island, won both the Whitbread Book of the Year Award and the Orange Prize for Fiction, Best of the Best. Her latest is The Long Song, and it's published in this country by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.